Hi and welcome to the first Geek Town podcast. We're planning on doing this on a regular basis with lots of chat covering sci-fi, MMOs, gaming and all the other stuff we cover at the main site on geektown.co.uk. However, to coincide with the release of Star Trek Series 1 Remastered and Star Trek The Original Motion Picture Collection on Blu-ray and Star Trek The Alternate Realities Fan Collection on DVD, we had the opportunity to chat with the one and only George Takei. If you have any comments or questions, hop on over to Geek Town and leave us a message. Enjoy the interview.
Hello.
Hi, is that George?
Yes, it is. And you must be Dave Elliott.
Yeah, that's right. It's good to be talking to you this morning, George.
Good to be chatting with you.
You're in LA this morning?
I am. I'm a native Angeleno.
Ah, right. Okay. So you're at home or?
I'm at home.
Yeah, wonderful.
And this is not early evening for you, isn't it?
Yeah. It's about 10 to 6 over here at the moment.
And your website is called Geek Town?
Yeah, geektown.co.uk.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, that would be great. We're always looking for new visitors.
Ah, well, you've got a new one here.
Wonderful. So we're calling to talk to you about this whole new set of DVDs and Blu-rays of Star Trek that are being released this month.
Isn't that amazing? This is the 43rd year, and we still continue to trek on.
I know. I mean, it's incredible. Doesn't it kind of freak you out, the popularity of Star Trek even now, even when it's not running on... I mean, I know there's a new film,
yes.
But it's not running on TV at the moment.
It's really amazing. But, you know, this phenomenon has made me think on it. And I do think that Star Trek, very core of Star Trek, the philosophy of Star Trek, was unique, is unique, and still relevant today. Although it was intensely relevant back in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, because using science fiction as a metaphor, we dealt with political issues, social issues, and certainly we had mind-boggling science fiction devices, technological speculation.
Yeah.
And so much of that has become reality in our lives today. I think that's why Star Trek has remained relevant. For example, you know, in the U.S., we had fiery race riots breaking out in our major cities. It was a time of, you know, the civil rights movement. Race was a turbulent factor.
Yeah.
And we had the first interracial kiss between Uhura and Captain Kirk, which was blacked out, if you'll excuse the term, in the American South.
Yeah.
And today we have an African-American president of the United States.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean,
we had, you know, a Russian-accented crewmate, which was pure political fiction back then because we were locked in a Cold War, the Soviet Union and the United States threatening each other with mutual nuclear annihilation. And today we have, in fact, a spacecraft out in space with not only Americans and Russians, which is a mind-boggling thing, working side by side, but people from all over this planet, different races, different, you know, Israelis, different religions, you know, all working together in concert, just like on Star Trek. So it is still not only relevant, but many of the fictional part, the political fiction, the science fiction, the social fiction, is reality, science fiction. You know, we had that amazing device that we called the communicator on our hip, and we walked around with it. Today, it's become a nuisance in our society.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at things like iPhones, particularly now, and the amount of things that they can do, you know.
Oh, you have a whole encyclopedia in your pocket, in the palm of your hand. You know, and we had that lumpy console that we looked at, huge screen, and it was amazing then because we got information immediately, you know, across the galaxies. Now we carry that around in our pocket.
I know, it's incredible. Speaking of technology moving forward, the PR company sent me a copy of the alternate reality DVDs, which is the first time I've had chance to see Star Trek with all the updated special effects.
The remastered, yes.
Have you seen these versions? How do you think they fit into the original
I've
shows?
Not seen the alternative universe ones, but I have seen the remastered episodes. And the wonderful thing, you know, I'm a conservationist. I like, and I'm a trustee of a museum, and with museums, you know, you want the authentic thing. You don't want a replica of something else, you know, of what you're supposed to be looking at. So, you know, I'm a conservationist of our heritage. But at the same time, I'm a devotee of scientific and technological advances.
Yeah.
And beauty part of the collection of the first season is that you get both.
Yeah.
You can see it in its original at that time imaginative special effects, but by today's standards looking charmingly and quaintly antique, you know. But you can also have the remastered version, both. And so, you know, it's the best of both possible worlds.
The I think that the remastering stuff's done with very much with sort of heart of the original. You know, they've not tried to go too over the top with the way that they've redone the Enterprise. It very much looks like just a clearer version of the original thing, I think.
Exactly, and it looks like it's really floating in space, and the space is dimensioned. You know, you see, you get a sense of a much more detailed planet that you're going by.
Sure.
And the sound is dimensioned as well, so that all the technological advances that have been made visually and orally are available to us in the remastered version. But you also see the quaintness and the charm of the original. And it, you know, it's kind of tantalizes the imagination, doesn't it? You think 40 years ahead, and what advances would have been made so that we would see the remastered versions that we're amazed by today as quaint and charming.
I was one of the things on the alternate reality DVDs was the mirror.
I wish I'd seen that. No, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. It's got the remaster version of Mirror Mirror and the evil. Mm. Yeah, the evil. How much fun was it playing a sort of evil version of a character you knew so well?
Well, you know, that's the beauty part of doing a science fiction series. You're not locked into a character. You know, if you're doing a detective or a police series or a Western, you know, the character is set. But because we were doing science fiction, for us actors, it was like doing repertory theater.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to, yes, I'm Sulu, but not the Sulu that we know and love. It's a whole I'm a villainous Sulu with an ugly scar over his face, you know. And it was so much more fun to sink your teeth. And, you know, actors are a little hammy. and we get to kind of chew the scenery a little bit, you know. And you get to do that, you know, to go into the alternative universe or in another episode, Kirk and McCoy and Scotty age rapidly and they got to play old men versions of their character, you know. So I think it was a blessing to be cast in a sci-fi series where you can be a member of a repertory theater company.
Yeah. I have a friend who occasionally grows a goatee beard, and he says one of the main problems with how Star Trek having gone down that route and showing the evil versions is every so often when he turns up with a goatee beard, they just accuse him of being an evil version of himself. One of the other Star Trek releases this month is the original motion picture collection, which includes the first six movies remastered on Blu-ray. And that includes the brilliant Undiscovered Country, where you turn up and save the day.
Yes, my favorite episode.
Would you ever be interested in doing a new sort of series based around you and the Excelsior?
As a matter of fact, when Voyager was about to go off the air, Paramount invited fan input on what they should do next. And there was a tidal wave of emails, letters, and phone calls to Paramount suggesting that they do a Captain Sulu series, an Excelsior series.
Right, yeah.
Because that was the expected, anticipated, logical segue after Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. You know, it ends that way with Captain Sulu roaring off on the Excelsior, and McCoy saying, "By God, that's a big ship." And Scotty, with a twinkle in his eye, says, "Hey, but not so big as had a captain, I think." You know, I mean, that's a great lead-in into an Excelsior series.
Yeah.
And the fans wanted that. But the Paramount executives are tone deaf. I thought surely that was going to happen too. But they came up with the Enterprise, which is going back in time. You know, they just didn't understand Gene Roddenberry's concept and his vision. Star Trek is always going forward, not backwards. And there's that wonderful Star Trek song of the, I think it was the 80s in the UK, "Star Trekking Across the Universe, always going forward because we can't find reverse," you know. Well, that's the Enterprise was going in reverse, you know, going back in time, so that you lost the shock of the new.
Yeah.
You know, what? Oh, look at that amazing technology, or look at that amazing civilization. Look at, you know, what a mind-boggling thing. Warp speed. Oh, my God. Beaming over. You know, all that is lost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, what is this? You know, we've been there, done that, you know. I think Paramount made a real mistake in not going with the Excelsior series.
Would you like to see Star Trek back on the small screen at some point in some
time? Well, as you know, we've lost three of our colleagues already.
Yeah.
Jimmy Doohan, who was a great buddy of mine. In fact, I called him my best drinking buddy. passed in 2005, I think. It's been about 4 years now. And DeForest passed in 99. And just recently, Major Barrett Roddenberry passed. So it's going to be difficult to revive it as we remembered it, you know. And certainly, I'm the youngest of the original Star Trek crew, but we certainly don't look like what we looked like back then. And the captain has certainly grown. Is that the right word?
Yes, well, that's true, I suppose.
He's become a bigger actor. Oh, I'm being catty, aren't I? I think it requires some kind of imagination, some science fiction for us.
There was always a talk of a Star Trek Academy where you could have some of the older guys, you know, like some people
as professors.
Yeah, as professors, as that sort of thing.
But you don't have the sense of you know,
adventure and exploration. That's always the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a bit more staged.
Yeah. I was looking at the cast listing online for Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and you realize at that point the Enterprise apparently had three captains and four commanders on it.
I know. I you know, throughout the TV series and from the beginning of the movie series, I was campaigning for a captaincy for Sulu because, you know, as you said, we've been getting advances in title. We've been getting titular advances, you know. But I said, you know, Starfleet is supposed to be a meritocracy. And if we're supposed to be getting these advances because we've earned them, why are we doing the same old job? Why is Sulu still at the same old helm console, saying the same old aye aye, Sir Warp 3, you know, steady as she goes? I mean, it's not logical. It's not the way Starfleet should be represented. And so, you know, with that argument, I was campaigning for a captaincy for Sulu. And at long last, it took, you know, six movies,
yeah.
but Sulu finally got his command. Yeah, there is that little anachronism or inconsistency of having four commanders and one captain.
Yeah, it's certainly kind of, at least, you know, if something happened to one of them, you've always got a spare.
Ah, yes.
Of course, as well as the movies, there's also Star Trek Online due out next year. Do you have much involvement with the video games?
Well, I've got a game out now called Red Alert Command and Conquer.
Of course, yes, you did the...
I'm playing the Emperor of Japan.
The Emperor of Japan in that, yeah. I've not seen it yet, but it's it looks very good.
Well, do check it out. And I've got another one coming out. Red Alert is out now, but I've just did work on another one called Pain.
Yeah.
And it is very descriptive of the nature of that game.
Do you enjoy doing the game work? Do you like doing the voiceovers and stuff? I know you've done voiceovers for things like Future Armor as well.
Well, I've got another parallel career that's developed because things are slowing down on with television and movies. You know, this economy is impacting everything.
Yeah.
I just got back from I serve as a narrator for a symphony concert.
Oh, right.
And I just did a tour, a 3-week tour with the Canton, Ohio Symphony and the Springfield, Massachusetts Symphony. And next week I'm going to Ottawa, Canada to work with the Ottawa Symphony Orchestra. For the past 6-7 years now, I've been narrating symphony concerts from Honolulu, Hawaii to Long Island, New York. So it's become a parallel career.
What's the sort of narration?
Aaron Copland's Lincoln Chronicles involves the spoken word throughout, you know. And then it ends with the Gettysburg Address. But the one that I've been doing the most is this symphony called Lord of the Rings, and it does have a genre relationship.
Yeah.
It's written by Johan Mays, a Dutch composer, and I get to do the voice of naturally Frodo and Sam and all the other characters, but the one I have the most fun with is Gollum.
Yes, I can imagine.
Gollum is a big hit. And that's what I'll be doing in Ottawa, Lord of the Rings.
Cool. Well, I look forward to seeing that if it ever comes over to the UK. It's looking like my time's almost up, so just want to say thanks again for talking to us here at Geek Town.
My pleasure.
Absolutely great.
Thanks a lot. Good chatting with you.
And you.
Take care. Bye-bye.